Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of What's in the Box, where we talk about what we're playing in Cube and what you should be trying in yours. I'm one of the hosts, Quad Nines. Here's my co-host, Zakiel.
What's going on, everybody?
And we've got a special guest this week. You may know him from YouTube or Twitter fame, but it's Elite Mortal 03.
What's up, guys?
Hey, sweet. Well, definitely glad to have you on.
Yeah, glad to be here. I've been following you guys. Definitely wanted to be a part of this, so thank you for the invite.
Of course, of course. So you are a pretty prominent YouTuber in terms of the MTG Cube community and MTG community in general. So let's just kind of get into some quick background. So what were the initial thoughts of YouTube channel, you know?
Well, honestly, I had created a YouTube channel specifically for watching mature content videos and just sat on the account for like 4 years. And then along came Milo the Great One. You guys probably know him now on his channel, Milo the Gathering. And he did something called YouTube trading with Magic cards. And it was really like new thing for me, and I was very skeptical, but I loved his content, very entertaining and trustworthy guy, and so I decided I would try this internet trading fad out, and decided I needed to make an actual channel, post kind of a background video, and then sort of these trade confirmation videos, and then one thing led to another where I decided I would record some pack openings, and things just kind of kept growing from there, and I got more prominent with trades, and the channel just kept growing. So that's kind of where it ended up. It never was meant to be like a job or anything. You know, doing videos is kind of like a just like a hobby of mine. Mm-hmm. So you know, I always just want to have fun with it, and I never want it to like be a job or feel like one.
Mm-hmm. Now, your most prominent series, I think, which one I actually copied myself, is Pimpage Pickups. And you would post, you know, videos of you opening up cards that you got in trades or that you purchased for your cube and your EDH decks, which also happens to be the theme of today's episode. And talking about that, you know, what kind of brought you to Magic? Where was, I know from your background, I know you have a vlog style channel, and I know you had played Magic, I believe, was it in Onslaught originally? Correct me if I'm wrong.
Actually, earlier than that.
Earlier, okay.
Yeah. So it all started one Christmas. I think this was back in middle school. My cousin came out and basically sold us on this new card game called Magic the Gathering. Me and my two younger brothers, we didn't have any cards, but he had brought a bunch of stuff out, and we talked our uncle into taking us to the local Myers that carried some Magic cards, and my first purchase was the starter kit of Portal and two packs of Tempest, and so that's basically where it kind of started. We spent the whole Christmas vacation week learning the game and playing, and it was just a lot of fun. And each and every year, we just kept revisiting every Christmas and every summer. And, so that's where I started, was Tempest. And then I actually ended when I went off to the Army after high school, which was right at, like, 8th edition. And that's when I stopped playing Magic.
So you missed out on all the goodness of the modern frame. I guess you came back and it's like, well, at least they're not whiteboard anymore. But
yeah, I came back in with I'll basically say it was Innistrad, but what got me in was it's a pretty interesting story. My newly born son, who was almost a year old, well, he had a Toys R Us gift card for $25. So we're walking around Toys R Us. I let him pick out whatever he wanted, and he picks out like a $20 toy. There's like $4 or $5 left on this gift card, and I didn't want to carry around this piece of plastic card in my wallet or anymore. So I like happened to see on the side at the cashier thing a Magic cards, and I was like, 2012 core set. boy, it's been a long time. I wonder what Magic's looking like. I'll buy this with the rest of the card, and I'll just give him, you know, $5 cash later. And so I bought a 2012 core set, got it out in the car, and I open it up and flipping through the cards, and I get to the rare, and I'm like, what the hell is this? Gideon Jura Planeswalker. What is Planeswalkers? And then I look at the rarity symbol, and I'm like, orange? What is this? And I read about it. It's mythic. And I was like, oh, my God, so much has changed. Like, I have so much to learn. And it was funny because I then started talking to my cousin who lives in D.C., and I live in Stephen City, Virginia, so we're only about an hour away from each other. He was like, yeah, man, I actually still play Magic, because he was one of them that, you know, we grew up playing with. And I was like, you do? Really? And so he had some friends, and they introduced me, and they got me into EDH, and I built my first EDH deck, which was Grimgrin, and got completely stomped. Game after game after game after game. I didn't win a single game. I think we played like 9 different matches. And I was like, wow, I got some work to do. So that's pretty much what hooked me in, because I'm very competitive. And so I just felt the urge that I needed to try to beat them. And yeah, the obsession took off.
Well, at least you started out in the right colors, even if you didn't have good results that first couple matches.
Yeah.
So what got you into Cube? Like you said, I know you saw Milo's channel. He's obviously really big in Cube, does a lot of good videos. But when was like your first Cube experience?
Well, Milo was actually that kind of introduction into Cube. And my first time actually playing was online. I downloaded the client, and I knew that the Holiday Cube was going on, and so I gave that a try and was absolutely hooked. I was like, wow, doing these busted things is fun. And so after talking with, you know, my playgroup, I was like, you know, I'm thinking about building a cube with a bunch of this, a bunch of the good cards in Magic's history. What do you guys think? And they were like, that sounds sweet. You know, then we never have to buy, you know, booster boxes really to draft with. And we can just pull out the cube and play pretty much our favorite format. And, yeah, so between Milo introducing me and then kind of getting hooked through online play, that's pretty much where I started with cubing.
Weed, what was your first like art type that you usually went for when you're drafting early on?
Well, I would say that the first archetype ended up probably like in the very first draft was a Planeswalker Super Friends in like like American control colors.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a lot of fun to play with because I was like Planeswalker. But what I found was, with my my novice skills at MTGO, very slow play incurred, and I usually went to time for every freaking match. So it was not the best first experience, but I started getting to learn how to, you know, to navigate the client and be more familiar with the cards and their interactions. But mind you, the next deck I drafted was a very aggressive white weenie deck. So that way, all I had to focus on was turning creatures sideways and not worry about any of the crazy interactions.
I think your first experience is pretty similar to most people's. I you know, every time I have a new drafter come over, they'll open up a new pack and they'll be like, oh my gosh, all these cards are so good. And, you know, I mean, for most of us, I think I was the same way. My first deck was just like 10 Planeswalkers. It was like, I don't care if I can cast them. I just want to put them all in my deck.
Yes.
So sweet, sweet. You know, and fast forwarding a bit, so you had played in the Holiday Cube, and from, you know, what point after that did you kind of decide, you said you had started with your local group, you know, when do you decide to really kind of grind down and get kind of, I guess, more into it and kind of go on the pimpage side, if that makes any sense?
Yeah. So basically my, and this is pretty crazy, the progression of my mindset. Because when I started out, which was relatively slow, I was just buying boxes. I think I bought like two or three Innistrad booster boxes, and then wasn't thrilled with Dark Ascension, so I didn't buy anything of Dark Ascension. And then I bought like three booster boxes of Avacyn Restored and another three boxes of Return of Ravnica, and I was just really getting into it and having fun opening packs and stuff. And this whole time I'm trying to piece together these EDH decks. Grimgrin wasn't working out, so I swapped to Annamar and started building his deck. And I said to my friends, I was like, why in the world would anybody want to spend so much more money on a foil card when the play is what matters, just spend $10 on whatever card as opposed to $50 for the same card. Mm-hmm. It didn't make any sense to me. And I thought that, anybody that was buying these foils was crazy. and so the one thing you need to understand about me is I'm not only very competitive, but I tend to be goal oriented. Mm-hmm. And so, and this kind of segues into World of Warcraft, which I played a lot of, back in the day. Mm-hmm. But, I'm always looking for that kind of self-improvement and setting goals for myself. And so, that first goal was, all right, we need to build a good Annamar deck. And so once I put all the cards together, then I was like, well, what to do now? Well, I guess I could start getting some foils for it. They do look sweet. So, just seeing people's trade binders and they had some of the cards that I could replace, I was like, all right, let's start getting some of these foils. And so then that process started. And the more foils I got, the more I really liked them. And one of the things I noticed also was that foils tended to be more of a safer investment as opposed to the non-foil cards that I had. Mm-hmm. And so it made good sense for me to start getting them. Once my Annamar deck was done, I also decided, let me build a second deck so that way my playgroup doesn't exactly know who I'm going to bring to the table at any point in time. So I started a Gave deck and, went through the same kind of process. wasn't really having the intention of pimping that out, but lo and behold, once Annamar was finished, I swapped over to Gave and pimped Gave out. And, then it came time to set a new goal, and that's when I started getting into Cube. And I looked at my two EDH decks, which probably like 90% or, little less of the cards between the two decks are Cube cards. And so I already had a bunch of foils that I could start the Cube off. And so then that's kind of where I transitioned. I didn't bother with non-foils in the Cube. I just started getting the foils off the bat. I already had a good foot in the door from my EDH decks and went from there and just kept getting more and more foils.
That's a really interesting question that someone asked in the subreddit is how do you approach cards? But quickly, before we get into that, I just want to say your Annamar EDH deck tech on YouTube is like beautiful. It's amazing. I was watching it actually last night. I think it's one of your more popular videos. You show off, of course, all the foil fetches and shocks and all the crazy judge promos and stuff. And that's a really sweet video for anybody interested in seeing that. But
I was just going to add in, it's definitely an outdated video, and I've been meaning to do updated deck techs for both Annamar and Gave. But I was just—it just keeps getting postponed, and eventually one of these days I will get around to it.
Foil cradle and all those crazy stuff—it's awesome.
Yeah.
So you had just said you had transitioned into kind of getting just starting off and just getting the foil off the bat because the card is good and it's going to go in your deck. And that was one of the questions on the subreddit is would you rather proxy the card up and test it or and get a default copy and fix it later, or do you just go straight in for the foil, or do you go for an alter? And so what is your opinion on that? If you're looking at a new card that's coming out, do you look for the San Diego promo, do you look for the pack foil? Do you look for the dual deck foil? Do you look for the normal card, you know, alternate art or something? Because, like, Ugin's promos are only alternate art kind of stuff. What's your opinion on that?
As far as my opinion goes with the foils that I'm after, it starts off, I prioritize the old border foils. If there is a version of the old border foil, that's what I want.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it really just depends on the, like, the artwork or maybe the flavor text I really like, or, you know, if it's a Judge promo, because I'm a fan of Judge promos. It just kind of depends from that point on. The ones that I really tend to avoid are the FTV foils. I don't like the foil process on them.
Me neither.
They look bad. They kind of feel bad. It's just doesn't fit right. So
it's just one of those, like, if you have to get that one over, like, if the only other thing is like a white border one, like, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, or if that's the only foil version, like, for instance, Black Vice, I have in my cube, which was great because I had bought it for like $2 and then it got unbanned and now it's like $20 and $30 or whatever now.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the only foil version of Black Vice. And so I will always go with a foil version if it's available as opposed to a non-foil.
Okay. What do you think about that, Drew? For your endeavors, your cube endeavors, what is your preference towards pimping out
the cube? I've gotten a little bit better at it over the years. At first start off, you know, it was like, just get what I thought I might want to play. Wasn't sure about my list. And then I realized that some of my cards were full and then some weren't. And it just drove me crazy. So now it's pretty much like, if I open something out of a new set, I'll try it out. But other than that, like, I just go straight for the fulls, like Matt said. And, one of the big things is, or the one thing that, made me mad was I got a show and tell from Urza. I was like, I'll just get the regular one, you know, that there's no full Urza cards for unless they're Judge promos. And like the next week they announce and preview the Judge show and tell. But, I love old border fulls myself. Let's see, Plowander is the one I think of the most. It's like just light years better in the old Urza block full versus like the core set, whatever. It's just everything about it's better, but,
yeah, definitely. It's like same with Rancor.
I agree.
Oh yeah.
All right. Agree through and through.
Yeah. And one more thing to add on, because I know you had asked about the, proxies.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great. Like if you're starting a cube out and you want to proxy a lot of it up instead of having to make that huge initial investment into a bunch of the cards, find out what you do like playing with instead of trying to just dump a bunch of money and then maybe not play, say, Storm in your cube or Reanimator. And but with my cube, I'm at the point where, you know, the bulk of the cards are never going to change.
Yeah.
I currently only have 3 proxies, and that's the power that I'm missing, the Black Lotus, the Mox Pearl, and the Mox Sapphire. And so those are the proxies in my cube. So at least I still get to play with them and have fun with them. But, the goal is to change them out, eventually, which will take a while. But, I think, when a new set comes out, if the foils are relatively cheap, you know, like under $10, then I will pursue getting them to add right to the cube if I think it's good enough. But if they're like really expensive, I will sit and wait because, you know, a lot of people know, especially once Standard rotates out, the foil cards will drop in price. And so it's like with the new Jace Vryn's Prodigy, I kind of missed the boat on that. The foil version was like $50. I think you said, Zakiya, that you got the Comic-Con one like at, what, 70?
Yeah, 70 or $80.
Yeah.
And I felt bad after I got it, too. I was like, oh, this card isn't even that good.
Yeah, and so then, like, all of a sudden, you know, it's being played a little bit more in Modern, a little bit more in Legacy, but a lot more in Standard. And the San Diego Comic-Con one, I think, is like $250
something
now.
Stupid, yeah.
Yeah, and the... and the other foil is like 100 whatever. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to wait. I don't need to put it in my cube immediately.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things I tend to do is my cube sometimes is a little bit slow updating, just because I know I don't want to spend wasted money.
Yeah.
So I will, you know, I'll just wait. And I've got plenty of reserve cube cards in a binder that will love to make it into the cube.
Oh,
they,
yeah.
They kind of
on deck binder, yeah.
Yeah, they swap in and out every so often. And so, yeah, I'm never short on playables.
So one question off the Reddit thread, Lord Anarchy asks, what do you value higher when determining what is pimp? Raw price or actual sweetness of a card? For example, Beta Wrath of God versus 7th edition Foil Wrath of God, or P3K Rares versus Foil Judge Promos?
So again, to me, it's all about the shininess. I want the foil card, and that is, in my opinion, what is pimp. So a 7th edition foil Wrath of God is the ultimate pimpage for me. It's old border, it's a beautiful looking card, and I know some people have different opinions on that, but that's just mine. You know, another one is the 7th edition foil Birds of Paradise. I think that is a beautiful card. Love it. And you know, some people get on their kick with foreign cards, but I'm not big on foreign cards at all. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things I want is any person that might be new that's playing my cube, I want them to be able to read and fully understand what each and every card does. So I avoid at all costs. I don't have any like textless type cards, like a Cryptic Command textless, just be brutal for a new player. And then, you know, no foreign cards. And so that is how I determine the ultimate pimpage, is through the foil and then the old border and then, the artwork. And typically that ends up being the highest valued version of the card. Yeah. Not all the time, but that is typical.
Okay. And what about you, Drew? What are your preferences towards those kind of things?
I'm a lot the same way, with a few exceptions. Like my favorite counterspell is not the most expensive one, but it's got the flavor text that I like, and it's Mercadian Masks. Like I'd rather have that over like a Beta one, or I don't know. There's a couple different arts for that. But now the one place I'm a little different is Lightning Bolt. Like I've got a Beta Lightning Bolt, and I had like an M10 foil before that, and I got a Beta one or a Judge one. And I don't know, like I like them both a lot. I really, as long as it's not like a fire lightning, I think it's probably doing okay. as far as foreign ones go, I've got a couple cards, but it's just, like I've got a Chinese Polluted Delta because it's the only Onslaught one I could find when I was trying to get all the proxies out of my cube. And since, you know, most everybody that was going to play would know what it did. And I think I've got a Italian, Caracas. So I think those are about the only two I have that are foreign. Now I did recently slip in the promo Cryptic Command just to troll everybody that was drafting. We talked about that before. I had the Lorn one in.
You're
there,
a sick person.
Hey, I wound up drafting it anyway. It's not like I'm out to deal with it.
Now I actually differ in opinion here. I do enjoy foils and the promos, but I like a couple of the cards, like Wrath of God specifically, and like Black Vice. You know what's funny is I was gonna buy an Alpha Black Vice because ABU Games had them for like $20 or $30 like 2 months ago, and I was like, I'll wait, you know, whatever. Now that's just not a thing anymore. But I like the idea of opening up a pack and being like, there's a pack foil GTA next to a piece of power, which obviously can't be foiled unless you want to use a proxy, which once again is fine in my opinion. That next to a beta card next to this. I just kind of like a little bit of everything. I enjoy foils, of course. I go after some of the most big ones, but, for example, Ugin's, the promo Ugin I got for a good price, and I actually like that art more than I like the pack foil art. Just a sweet card, but just my preference. So, interesting stuff.
And, Do you have any alters in your cube right now? Are they just like for the stuff that like can't be foiled or just to make it stand apart? Like, so I just got a Talarian Academy altered. That's one of the few I have in there.
Yeah, I saw that. It's pretty sweet. Right now, I don't have a single alter in my cube. That's one of the things I'm still up in the air about. I haven't really decided as far as the cards that cannot be foiled, whether or not I want to pursue altering them to make them pop, or if I want to try to go after like a black border version, like Control Magic, get a beta version of that, or you know, whatever the other cards are. So still up in the air. I haven't decided because my goal right now is just to complete the foil process, and I think I'm like five cards away from finishing that off, five or six.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That was a quick. Plaid Magic on Reddit had asked that question as well. Biggest issue for me: what's the best way to pimp the unpimpable cards like Necromancy, Baleful Strix? Do you make your own proxy foils or alters? So, yeah. I, for example, my thing was, I liked Tim Dottorak, but I did not like any of the arts, so I just got Eric Klug to make me an art. So yeah, I mean, it's cool. I'm waiting, hopefully Baleful Strix gets, some kind of promo or something at some point in time.
Yeah, that and, Charlotte's Agent. Yeah, those two just
definitely. Yeah, those would be sweet.
I mean, they made a full Felden, which is a good card, but I mean, come on. I need a Baleful Strix.
Yeah.
Now, you were talking a while ago about not liking the foreign cards, but for example, I saw your draft that you posted, before the pre-release. And, you know, that I love seeing those, by the way, but I noticed that you do have, you have the white border duels in there. Would you consider getting like foreign black borders? That way you don't have to go all the way to like paying for the alpha or beta. The duels,
no.
Or are you just going to stick with what you got there?
No, I will stick with what I have because, you know, I only speak English. I read English, and so I'm just going to stick with English. You know, it's just to have the black border isn't enough incentive for me to not be able to read the actual card. So yeah, those are out of the question. I know that there was a couple comments, I think, left on that video in regards to the FBBs, but... yeah, I mean, maybe one day once I complete my Power 9 set, maybe that'll be the next goal, is try to get all the beta duels. Who knows?
There's just so much. Like, so if you already have the unlimited or revised ones, it's like I could almost get another color of cube in full for like a beta underground city. So.
Yeah, they are really pricey. It's
crazy. So.
Yeah, that is a very interesting thing. So actually I have a question for you. I think you and I are the only people that I know who will run actual power in our cubes. Apart from, I know one local guy who does it. Just a question on your playgroup. Do you ever run into problems? I think you said, and from what I've gathered from your vlogs, you usually just draft with, you know, family and friends at your house kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, would you ever consider taking out your cube, or do you have any worries about taking out your cube because of its value into public? It's like an IQ or something?
Okay. Absolutely. This cube's actually never, it's left the house two times, but that's because I was going to family houses.
Yeah.
It's never been to my local store. I've never taken it to draft with strangers. It's always been like really close friends or blood relatives that I know is not going to steal from me. They're going to take care of my cards, and we're all here to have like a good time. And so yeah, it's definitely a concern of mine. I am very paranoid when it comes to these high value cards if I was to take it out in public. So yeah.
Yeah, I have the same thing. I think my cube has only ever gone to my friend's house who's down the street from me, and it's never going to a GP or anything, but
yeah.
Yeah, you're missing out. We drafted mine and Lubafu's and Zimmet's. We drafted all of our cubes over, you know, three different drafts, obviously, at GP Memphis last year. And it's a lot of fun, but, you know, it's basically like, you know, I trust those guys and it's people that they trust or like my friends that I trust. But yeah, it was definitely not like, hey, rando guy, come over here and sit down.
Yeah.
I've heard many stories, unfortunately, but, you know, just, things we do. So question from Usman the Rad. Shout outs to Usman, and also shout outs to Plaid Magic. I didn't say anything. They both have podcasts, excellent sources, and parts of the Cube community. Usman asks, how do you mitigate being tied to a card for pimp value versus letting go of a card that just isn't contributing anymore? And also thoughts on signatures, alterations. He has a Jackal Pup and Isamaru signed by Dog Fashion Disco and an Ancient Tomb signed by Band the Ancients. Most people don't really care. But I know you said, Lee Mortal, you're not too into signatures or alterations. But for example, I do have something that comes to mind when I think of this. For example, the new Gideon was spoiled, in terms of how do I mitigate being tied for a card for pimp value versus letting go of a card that isn't contributing anymore. The new Gideon was spoiled, and unfortunately, I knew in the back of my mind that I have to get rid of my 2013 SDCC Ajani Call of the Pride. It's unfortunate, but I personally just make the cut. Like, I try to, you know, kind of change it up, have some fun, but. Unfortunately, a part of pimping for me, and, you know, a kind of strict cutthroat, philosophy that I have, often leads to random stuff like that. But, you don't have to sell it. You don't have to do anything. In this case, it ended up going towards, piece of power, Ancestral Recall. So I was not too disappointed, but, have you guys ever had an experience like that?
Yeah, as for me, start off with the signatures. I'm not a fan of signatures on the cards. Currently in my cube, there is one stinking card with a signature. That's the promo Croson Grip. And, I had ordered it from Channel Fireball as SP, and I didn't realize that when it's SP, they could send you a signed card unless you specify. And so I got it, and I didn't make a big deal of it, and it's been in the cube ever since. I've just never even replaced it, and it's like, it's a cheap card. You think that I would have replaced it by now, but I don't know, maybe I'll just keep it in there for the lols. But otherwise I don't want the cards to really be signed or altered. Now as far as the next part, let's see, letting go of cards is actually not hard for me to do. Like I said, I've got a binder, which is, but they're all on deck, standing by, ready to, if they ever want to get back in, if they become good enough, if another card maybe makes them good enough. But my goal and intention is to have, like, the best kind of draft experience and the best cube possible for what it's doing. And so if the card's not good, then it gets the axe. Mm-hmm. So even if it's like a nice shiny foil, like I know I had the Fulminator Mage from Shadowmoor foil version, and I really was trying to make like land destruction a thing, but once I started adding Moxes in, it just wasn't good, and so I ended up cutting pretty much all the land destruction cards, and that Fulminator Mage went to the binder, and then I decided, well, I don't think I'm ever going to actually put land destruction back in. I'm playing Moxes, it's just not good enough unless you're Armageddon or Ravages of Warring somebody. The little one for one kind of cards, it just wasn't performing, so I ended up selling it and it went towards my Mox Jet, and so I'm like you were not sad.
I had a similar thing happen, but it was I've got a 7th edition Pyroclasm. I realized it jumped up, like, get pretty expensive. It's like 70 or 60 or something like that. And I got it for like 10. Yeah. Somebody was parting at their cube. I'm like, okay. And like, but nobody ever takes it that highly. Same thing with, like, I've got a beta Sinkhole. I love Sinkhole. Like, that's, you're talking about the one for one land destruction, but like in black, it's just something.
Well, yeah, Sinkhole is still in my cube. I like Sinkhole, it's efficient at 2 mana, but the Fulminator Mage at 3 mana, I just think it just doesn't get there quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah.
But like, it just seems to table all the time, and I'm like, this card is so good, why would anybody draft it? But, yes, I've had to take long looks at cards like that myself, but.
Yeah.
I'm still holding on to my Storm package, and it's going to be in there for a while. So I'll draft if nobody else does.
Yeah. Yeah, I know you love your Storm. Another one of the cards that was Nicol Bolas, the Planeswalker. Mm-hmm. I had just purchased the foil Conflux version. This was before Fate Reforged had come out, maybe like the set or two before that when I purchased it. So it had only been in my cube for a little bit, but the thing is, like, at 8 mana and Grixis colors, it's a very narrow kind of card, and it would table quite often. And so I ended up deciding to cut Nicobolas for Ugin, Planeswalker. And I was like, man, I just bought the Conflux foil, like, not too long ago. But, you know, it's one of those things. I'd rather have that colorless one in there.
As awesome as Nicobolas is, like you said, he tables, and, like, Ugin's the first pick. So
Yeah.
I think you swap there.
For me, in terms of signatures, I think I like them. I actually, one of the things I'm planning for GP Seattle, which is next month, I'm gonna be playing Legacy Lands, which is pretty cool, a unique deck. I'm not sure how well positioned it is to actually, like, in terms of actually winning the tournament, but it'll be a fun experience, of course. But one of the things that I'm really excited for is the artist gallery. I think Chris Rush is gonna be there, Mark Poole is gonna be there, and I was thinking about getting my power sign, and then I kind of gone back and forth on it like two or three times. I think I've kind of come to the conclusion, right, that I don't want it signed. But there's a couple cards specifically that come to mind, like True Name Nemesis. I play that in my cube, and the artist that's going to be there is, or the artist who made it is going to be there, so possibly get that signed. Same with the Delver and the Baleful Strix artist. But I personally like signatures. I have a slight distaste for Rob Alexander's signature, unfortunately. I think it's pretty lazy looking.
Yeah.
Like a line. You find those ones without them.
No, signatures are cool, though. I'm a big fan of alters and signatures, and there's a couple card arts that I think are, you know, so, like Reclamation Sage comes to mind. I think an alter of that would be pretty cool. That we do have the promo and the pack foil, but it's nothing too crazy. So that's anytime I'm thinking about ever getting something possibly signed, I think like that. I used to work for Nike, so I kind of want to get the Lightning Greaves altered to be the Back to the Future shoes. That'd be pretty cool. Pestermite would some of my plans are like Pestermite would be Link and Navi from The Legend of Zelda, City of Brass. I kind of want to make the Taj Mahal, just a bunch of like random stuff that kind of so are parts of my life, and then some Dota characters and some random cards. So those are my thoughts on that.
Nice.
And like you had said, till you just got your Talarian Academy altered.
I did. I'm still waiting to get to draft it, actually, since I got it back in. We haven't been able to draft, but I first picked it when it was just a turned around card that said Talarian Academy on it when it was sent off. I was like, yep, first pick. So I think I'll definitely first pick it now. But,
So next question is from LR Ron Howard. I'm not sure, he's obviously part of LR group. What do you guys do about foils warping? How do you straighten out foils and keep them from warping? I normally pack my cube up really tight in a box to keep it in, but that can be kind of tedious. How do you guys deal with that?
From what I've had great success with is simply just double sleeving your cards, which you should probably do anyways, especially if you're dealing with high dollar cards. But I use KMC Hyper Mats and the KMC Perfect Fits, and I keep them in a box and they stay very straight. It's not packed super tight that I can't like pull the cards out, but I mean it's fairly tight, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that seems to work just fine for me.
I do know that depending on what part of the country you live in, I think areas that are more humid, sometimes that is affected. The only other thing that I would add on to that is I know some people put silica packs in their cube to dry out if you live in like a really humid area. I'm not sure that is quite necessary, but it is, you know, if you do experience a lot of foils warping, I think that's probably the next step for you if you are double sleeving.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
Do you ever have any problems with that, Drew?
Like I said, sometimes when you get the From the Vault ones, they start off, you know, rather rounded. But yeah, I'll double sleeve the ones I have to, like say Rolling Earthquake or something like that, and double sleeve them and just jam them in, like in my land section because it's probably the tightest section, and just leave them in there for a good while. But and you know, pretty much just double sleeving those even will pretty much straighten it out.
I use the KMC Perfect Fits, and then I've got some LR sleeves from Limited Resources, but I think they're actually made by Legion. But they've been really good so far. I haven't had any problems with those. But they seem to keep them pretty straight.
Next question is from Nick Rick on Reddit. What's the best for pimping out your lands? Full art, foil, foreign language, guru, one of each land, art that are all the same. And then going on to say, best way to pimp out proxies and alterations. Do you use tokens or do you use any cool, sweet dice? And what's the pimpest box to hold the cube in? So do you guys, what land base do you guys use?
So, as you guys know, I'm big on the old border, so all my basic lands are foil old border. I try to, because I like the artwork best from Onslaught and Odyssey for those basics, so I try to get the majority of those. But I've got about 50 in each color, a few more in some of the other colors, like blue has a few more. But yeah, it's like 50 foil old border basics. And that's what I like. So, and they're usually like what, a dollar or so.
Yeah, not
so
too much.
Not, yeah, not breaking the bank if you're going after the unhinged ones.
Yeah, I actually just I did an EDH deck. It was goblins. That's mono red. But like I've got the one art from Onslaught, and I've got all the mountains the same. But like in my cube, I've actually got a mix. I feel kind of bad about it now. Think about it, but it's original Zendikar. And a few unhinged in there. Mostly it's just Zendikar. I've got some full, some regular, but basically just full art.
Mm-hmm. I was stupid enough to start off, and somehow I convinced myself that, like, all right, we'll pick up some foil unhinged now, get the rest later. Mm-hmm. I own like 10 or something. I've kind of given up on that. I mean, they're cool, but it's like $75 for every island is just absurd.
yeah.
But with Battle for Zendikar, you know, just releasing, I really like the Noah Bradley art lands. They're pretty
sick.
Yeah,
those are good.
I think there was a guy on the MTG Salvation pimpage thread, altered pimp cards cube thread. He posted his land base, and it's like one of each full art land. So he has one of the Judge promo packs, one of each of the unhinged land, and then a couple of, you know, of each of the Zendikar and stuff. And I think that's probably the way that I'm going to go to. In addition to that, he has an old land base, which would be like beta and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. You know, a bunch of people have their own little spin on it.
Yeah, that's kind of a neat idea.
Let's see.
I know that the one thing that I was kind of thinking about was, you know, with my EDH decks, I just run the old border foils for my basics in there. And for a while, because I was always trying to get the most pimped, you know, version of the deck, I was struggling with, do I want to upgrade those basics into the unhinged foils? Because, you know, I think that those look the best.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're more expensive than the Therese Nielsen full art judges. But I think that the unhinged are the best looking ones.
I believe
but,
so. Just
Yeah, so I was like struggling with that, but you know, Mark Rosewater and them, they haven't ever ruled out making another unset, and I'm afraid if I dump a bunch of money into these, like you said, $75 islands, what's going to sell if they, you know, make another unset?
Yeah.
They're the only thing that's going to sell, because these cards aren't going to be playable in, you know, Legacy and stuff, is the full arts. And I think that maybe they revisit the full art foils sometime down the road if they come out with that third unset. But yeah, if that was enough to like just make sure that I'll just stay away. I like my old border foils.
Yes. Talking, he also mentioned Guru lands. I actually don't like Guru lands. I think
they're not shiny.
They're not shiny. They don't look, you know, they're cool, you know,
they look
really
cool,
but yeah. I don't think they warrant the price that they do. I think the islands are like $300 or something.
Yeah, they're absurd.
Good lord. Yeah.
I think I'd rather have like what 30 beta islands over one Guru island.
Yeah.
If I'm not going full, if I'm going non-full, it's probably just going to be beta. I don't know.
And then the second part of his question: do you guys use tokens, sweet dice? What kind of box do you use to hold your cube?
For me, I actually don't have any tokens. I just have always used, some of those Chessic dice. Pretty much everybody in my playgroup has their own set of, like, Chessic dice and the D20s and stuff like that. And so if you're making 1/1s, you know, you just put the 1 up on the dice. And so that's all we do for the tokens. And then what was the other part of the question?
Box. What kind of box do you use?
Oh, yeah. So this is what's embarrassing for me. This is hilarious. Because my cube is, like, ridiculously expensive. It's a cool feature now on Cube Tutor that prices out what your cube is at. And mm-hmm. I don't know. Like, it was, like, in the $24,000 range or something now.
Yeah.
And so
I'm going to take a wild guess and say you use a white box.
Well, it's not. It's probably worse. It's one of the Theros holiday gift boxes.
The Theros one. Yeah. I use Ravnica and my jaw still drop. I use the Return to Ravnica one myself. I've heard such horror stories about the Theros one. So.
Well, I love the artwork on the Theros one. And it holds my 450 card cube with all the basic lands and two Ultra Pro boxes for like dice and stuff. Holds it perfectly. And so the next follow-up question to that has to be, well, where do you keep this crappy cardboard box full of money? And it is kept in a nice big fire and waterproof safe, locked up at all times unless I'm using it. So and then when I've transported it, it goes into another one of the smaller, like, portable size kind of fire safes. So I've always kept it, like, in an actual, like, hard case safe. But I'm curious to know, how the, I think they're called Cube Vaults.
Yeah, Cube Vaults. Yeah. They're made by a guy, I think his name is Murray. I actually called him like 2 weeks ago.
Did you?
Yeah, they're actually going through he has a new design for it that's going to be coming out later on this year. He said he has to get a couple prototypes in, but that's big, which is one of the reasons that he said Cube Vault has not been on Tularean community colleges. It's not been reviewed yet. It's because he wants to be able to meet the demand that might bring, and he's going to kind of revamp it. So,
oh, nice. Yeah, I was really interested in getting one of those, just to replace and upgrade this cardboard box. because it looks like it's pretty solid construction, you know, made out of some kind of like metal material, and it's like felt lined and, but it's, you know, again, I think what they start at like 150 or something like that.
I don't think that much actually. I think they're like, 120. But yeah, I mean, close enough, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's still, you know, a decent chunk of money. And so I, you know, but for all purposes right now, I'm still, you know, budgeting for the foil cards. But, that is something that I would like to probably get just to keep the cards that much more protected.
Every time I think about getting a cube bottom, I'm like, well, that's a judge foil I could get instead.
Yep. That's what happens.
Yeah, I use, unfortunately, the little white 500 count row box things.
Yeah.
But I do have all intention to get a cube ball, so eventually. But my plan, I think, is to kind of have, like, the way I view cube is I want it to kind of be like a board game. So I want it to be able to just have it on my shelf, you know, pop it out every now and then and be its own little experience. So in terms of the question regarding tokens and dice, there's a bunch of cool tokens that have, you know, come out on Kickstarter and stuff like that, and that'd be cool to get at some point in time. But right now, I'm also still finishing, for lack of a better term, just finishing everything that I haven't collected yet. I still have random proxies of. I don't have a Sulfuric Vortex just because I'm too lazy to buy one, but like just a bunch of random stuff I'll eventually get, and then after that, get some sweet dice and tokens and stuff.
I guess I do have a few sweet tokens. I've got some MTG McQuack Duck Soldiers that come out with Elspeth if she ever gets cast. And I've randomly got a couple of the full tokens from Channel Fireball from orders and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, I try to have like, you know, I've got a couple of the Onslaught Zombie and Soldier and Goblin tokens, but not enough really to do anything. But yeah, I just got mix of everything, I suppose.
Funny enough, I'm actually grabbing at GP Seattle. Hopefully, I'm going to be grabbing Milo. Nirvana. What is the lead artist of that?
That had passed away?
Yeah. Kurt Cobain? Kurt Cobain, yeah. So at GP Seattle, there's a special 1-1 Flying Spirit Kurt Cobain token that's only going to be released there by some specific artist. That's like, they have like, I don't know, 250 tokens available or something, and Milo wanted me to get some of those for him, so. Random plug, so yeah.
I forget how young you are, and then you start asking who's the guy from Nirvana.
I forgot that. I can't. Ironic, he's from where I live too, which is the worst part of that. But okay, moving into kind of the budgeting thing, because I know most of us haven't completely finished our cube, and there's a bunch of random stuff. Crocodile on Reddit asks, people who trade for random ass foils, how do you find them? This is a super fun topic, and it's also, you know, my experience is, you know, buy listing and grinding and trading and stuff. And, you know, do you guys have any tips for people out there who kind of want to, you know, further their cube?
one thing I've been really lucky with is I'm a 2 a.m. eBay person because I'm always up late. And I've got the app on my phone, which is a horrible idea when I think about it.
Yes.
Like occasionally I'll just like type in just MTG full, MTG cube, something like that. Or if I'm looking for a particular card and somebody's got one, and you know, I always click description, and every once in a while you'll get the sob story of breaking up the cube to pay for, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then you just go to their, you know, what other auctions they have. And this one guy was parting out his entire full cube, and I got like, I don't know, something like 35 cards, I don't know, like probably a third of what their TCG mid price was.
Yeah.
Cause obviously I was saving some on shipping and all that, but like in all his auctions, for some reason he had them all ending at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was the only person bidding. So it's like, yep, that. So, you can luck out sometimes on that if somebody's parting out, the Facebook group, high end Facebook group. You can occasionally find people parting their stuff out, but it's usually pretty.
It gets snapped up. Really quick.
Yeah, it snapped up. Anything that's a deal snapped up pretty quick.
Yeah, I've actually ran into like the issue where it's impossible to find somebody for the foil cards that I'm looking for or need. Like even my local game store, I feel bad because I love being able to give them my money and support their business, but he just never has any of the foils and the older and more expensive cards that I'm after, you know, because he has to cater to, you know, what's really moving there, and that's, you know, say just non-foil fetch lands and different cards like that. And so, you know, I'm at the point where I'm restricted to buy listing stuff and purchasing from some of the bigger retailers, mm-hmm. or, you know, snapping off a good deal on eBay. And, but I know for when I was starting out, I was pretty fortunate with actually YouTube trading. Mm-hmm. You know, that actually worked out pretty well. I was able to, you know, network a much broader, horizon of people than I had ever thought of, you know, making some trades with people that live in Germany and England and stuff like that for, you know, various cards that I needed that were harder to find that, say, my store didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked out well.
And shouts out to, Lengthy Zimmet. I think he's helped all of us get stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely,
he's actually sending me some stuff in the mail tomorrow.
Nice. Yeah, and same with you, Zakiel. I know you got me that foil mana leak from your store because couldn't find it anywhere, and the price was kind of jumping around with that one.
Yeah, I think it's like the arena promo or something like that.
Yeah, it's got the original, like, what is it, Stronghold artwork or whatever.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I got an 8-bed. It's got that art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the in terms of that, I think it's just kind of looking in places that too many people aren't, if that makes any sense. You know, you gotta be grinding. You have to be willing to look through. From my experience, you have to be willing to look through the binders for like random people at the end or their giant collections. Because in terms of cube, most of the cards, you know, sometimes the really obscure foils aren't worth too much. They're just hard to find. And he gives an example like 7th edition Wild Growth or something, or like a bunch of the 7th edition random foils, or in that case, the Arena promo Mana Leak, or even like the Arena promo Mana War.
That thing's impossible to find.
Yeah, I mean, just sometimes looking in random trade binders or going to GPs and grinding out and seeing what people have is the best way to do it.
Yeah, it's just harder though because those older cards are, you know, you're not going to find them in many people's binders in today's
really hard
kind of market. You know, they got a lot of the standard stuff. But, you know, if you're looking for the older 7th edition cards, you have to find somebody that was, you know, typically playing back then.
Mm-hmm.
I've been fairly lucky on Puka Trade, but, like, you're paying, you know, points-wise, you're paying top points for it, and, you know, then you just hope it's going to be mint when it gets to you.
Yeah,
I've seen
some
that,
of your condition videos. God,
I had to send a couple back, and I'm like, really? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm pretty easygoing about some things. Like if it's got a, you know, if it's got a little white on the back, fine, you know. But if it's got big dents like right on the text, no. So,
yeah.
But yeah, like I say, you just kind of got to get lucky, find a binder here and there, somebody that maybe just got back in the game. I've been lucky on that as well. Somebody just getting back in and trying to get into modern, and I'll have just like a ton of modern staples, and they've got all these random things they don't need anymore. So,
So another question. We talked about land a second ago, but I kind of want to jump back to that. Battle for Zendikar brought us some sweet expeditions, some sweet stuff. So what do you guys think about that? Are you going to be making the jump to replace your fetches and shocks, or you like the old stuff?
So on my YouTube channel, somebody had asked me that question, and I knew the immediate first response for me was I'm not replacing the old Border Onslaught fetch land foils. I'm just too big of a fan for the old Border. It's very nostalgic to me, and so I said no to that. And then, you know, I was considering maybe the Zendikar fetch lands being the first ones to replace. But, you know, I wanted to see the cards in person, those expeditions. And so at my pre-release, my buddy Steven was fortunate to open up a Watery Grave. And so I got up close and personal, got to check it out. And while I love a lot of the artwork on these new expedition cards, and I do think that they are pretty sweet, there's a couple things that I have issue with that they will not be making the addition into my cube. The first is... I'm a big fan of the color in the text box. So like for, you know, say that Watery Grave, you get to see, you know, this blue merging into this black in the text box. Mm-hmm. And right away you can tell, boom, this thing is, you know, Dimir colors, and it just looks really cool. Whereas the Expedition doesn't really have that. It has like the outline kind of the text box. Those little lines merge into each other with the color, but you know, it tries to stay true to its full art, and I use quotes there because it's really more just like an extension. It's not really like a not like a textless type full art card. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I didn't really care for was I'm so used to seeing the type of card right there in the middle. And what they did with the expeditions was they nudged it down all the way to like the bottom of the card. Mm-hmm. And so like your basic land types are now, you know, ooh, swamp and island, but it's at the bottom, and it just is like kind of off-putting. And then the third thing, lastly, that I didn't care for was you know, I'm just not really a big fan of the border on the card. You know, I feel like it's kind of like hieroglyphic-y, ancient, cluttered, too busy, sort of mess going on there. And so, not a big fan of that. I really kind of like, the true natural kind of brown border. You know, big, old border fan, but, you know, when they went to like the modernized frame, like with 8th edition on, it still kind of has that classic feel to it, even though it's not that full frame feel. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm not adding them in. And I've already started to see a lot of these expedition prices have fallen quite a bit.
Yeah.
And in most cases, the originals, I know like the original Shocklands are actually worth more than the expeditions now.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if it's value, then if that's what determines the pimpage in your cube, so be it. But, you know, I really like the original Shockland artwork. You know, I think the Hollowed Fountain is absolutely stunning. Steam Vents looks real good.
Cool is really, really great on the original Ravnica block. I like the new one too, but that's one of my favorite ones from the original block.
Yeah. What about you guys?
I feel the same way. I really, really, I don't own one, but I really like the Onslaught Polluted Delta. The Polluted Delta from Expeditions looks very good, but I don't know. There's a couple, like the Blood Crypt. I don't like the art at all. I think the original Blood Crypt is like way better.
Yeah.
There's a couple. The Steam Vents, I like the most. I think that is one is really, really sweet. But
yeah,
there's some of them I'm just like, But more than that, the thing that worries me, I haven't been able to look into it too much because I know that it's a bit different. But the Expeditions have, I think they called it a single layer rainbow, as opposed to From the Vault, which is two layer rainbow. And you can tell that a lot of cards that are being opened are coming out played or damaged or something. And that's the same thing. I don't know if anyone knows this, but another YouTuber, MythicMTG, made a video about perfect fitting From the Vaults. And if you perfect fit it From the Vault, you actually can damage the side of the card. It's similar to like Avacyn Restored foils, how the kind of weird texture kind of thing or weird surface. So that's one of the things I'm worried about, even though I probably won't be taking in it, won't be taking it in and out of a sleeve. If you do that to a From the Vault, I think he said like 8 to 10 times it starts to see wear. And then after that, it's like just legitimately damaged. And that's the same thing that happened with the Expeditions when they were released. A bunch of people were like, whoa, you know, I opened up this $400 card at the time and I can't sell it because it's like just looks terrible. It's scratched and everything. So
yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm going to have to sit on them. Quick little financial stuff for anybody out there. I definitely would suggest waiting until late November, early December, or maybe even a little bit later after that before you go after them. Because if you look, someone at my local shop paid, I think, $120 at pre-release for a Blood Crypt. That same Blood Crypt is like 50, 60 bucks or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, just be patient. I mean, those things are, just wait a bit.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to opened up Scalding Tarn in my box, which
big money.
Yay. Nice. Which, like, and it looks really good. It's going to EDH deck. It's not going in the cube. I doubt I'll sell it because, well, I don't really sell anything shiny, seems like. I like it. Like you said, I don't want to take it out of the perfect fit, like, ever, just in case. I'm getting an Overgrown Tomb from Zemet just because he made a sweet deal for me because he's shipping me some other stuff. And like it's a good bit below TCG right now, and it's also going to EDH deck, but I'm not really looking to like going after any of them right now. I'm going to do like you said, like wait until closer to December to see how low they go and then pick up the ones I want.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but that is that. Let's see our next topic here. Have you learned any lessons in your MTG finance, from your cube journey, from the point in which you started in terms of high-end foils and shiny promos and all that stuff? Is there anything that you wish you would have known when you started, that you know now?
I don't really have anything that I can, think of. Mm-hmm. Obviously, timing is everything. Mm-hmm. When you're purchasing higher value cards, and like, had I known that the Moxes, were all the Power 9 in general, what was it, like last October or September, mm-hmm. was gonna see a significant price bump, I probably would have told myself, hey, don't buy some of these foils, go get your Power 9 now, while they're like $400 as opposed to, you know, $800. Mm-hmm. But, in that same regard, you know, I picked up my foil Survival of the Fittest promo for $70 and now it's like at $300. So like timing's everything. So if I had told myself to get the power, would I not have gotten that survival and now I still have to spend $300 to get it now? I don't really know. The one thing I would say is, probably go after the old border stuff first, because a lot of the like newer type foils or lower value foils, you know, they're easier to get, and so they're not as or how should I say this?
The older volatile, yeah, they're gonna
The older foils are they're just a safer investment, or the ones that are like really obscure only have like one printing. You want to try to focus like those kind of cards first before, you know, just going after. Like that was my, I would say probably my one mistake was when I wanted to start foiling my cube, I was like, oh, let's just try to get, you know, 50% of this cube foiled out right away. And, you know, I spent X amount of dollars of, you know, whatever my budget was at the time buying all these $1 to $5 foil cards.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom. Sweet. Now I've got 50% of my cube foiled out. Well, those $1 to $5 cards are
still
all
gone, or maybe
they're either gone or been replaced, or they're still just $1 to $5. Like this, you know, I mean, they have to get foiled out at some point, but there wasn't much movement with them. Whereas, you know, I probably should have just used that money and started going after some of the bigger stuff first.
Mm-hmm.
And, that way, if those cards end up moving, you know, I won't be hurt like that survival,
mm-hmm.
which was a good one. So.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think definitely all the old border stuff that I own, all of the – even specifically I'm thinking about dual lands. Like I started picking up dual lands I think 3 years ago, and at the time Underground Sea – an unlimited Underground Sea 3 or 4 years ago was like under $200. You can get them just at that. Now they're like – I don't know. An unlimited one's maybe like $300 or $400 or something, maybe more. I don't even know.
Yeah. I know back then I was starting one of my goals was to get, play sets of all the revised dual lands. Mm-hmm. So I'd have my 40. And when I started that process, I was paying $75 for Volcanic Islands from revised. And so now they're like at 200 plus, something like that. So, mm-hmm. You know, that ended up being a pretty good purchase there for me too. Although I'm considering selling off the revised duels that I have that I'm not using in Cube or my Legacy deck and trading those in to try to get maybe the Black Lotus that I definitely want. I'm not sure.
I was lucky enough. I grabbed my Lotus from a local guy who is not a sob story, but you know, he was getting parting out the greater part of his collection. He was getting married and having a kid and stuff like that. And I think he valued it at 17, so I ended up paying like $1,300 and $400 in cash at the time. But that same Lotus, there's no way I think you could find a Lotus for $1,700. This one isn't mint by any means, but it's good enough for me to be able to play in my cube and, you know, have fun. So, for those of you, you know, grinding through, I think once again, just pick up the stuff. It's a bigger dip. It's more expensive and it, I guess, Not necessarily more painful, but it's just kind of like it's a lot of value at or a lot of money at face value. But I think in the end, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, anything like you said, like the duels or just anything reserve list, you know, that's going to be you want to get it sooner rather than later because 99 times out of 100, those cards are going to go up, not down.
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many cards that I've missed because I've been like, oh, I'll wait. And like you said, Moxes, there was, what was there? There was at the time there was a Tabernacle, there was a Mox, Jet, and like a Mishra's Workshop, all priced at like $300 in my local shop, sitting for like a year. And then also an Alpha Trop that was like $600. I was like, all right, you know, there's only like a few of us who, in the local community that are going to be willing to get this. I know all of them. They're not interested. All right. And then some guy comes in and just picks up everything. I'm like, cool. Thanks. But I mean,
dang.
I mean, it is what it is. Just, it's a lot of money at face value, like I said. But if you're kind of devoted into that thing, I highly suggest doing it because, like you said, the $1 foils, the Soldier of the Pantheons and Elite Vanguards and all those things are only going to be so much, right?
Yeah. The other thing is, you know, those are more prevalent in people's trade binders. You know, they might throw them in as extras, or you might just be flipping through and find it, and maybe they'll make you a super cheap cash price offer, you know, because it's not doing them any good.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the type of cards. Like, I would definitely avoid, like, the standard stuff if you're trying to buy right off the bat.
Yeah.
Like on TCG Player or something. But,
So, you know, we talked earlier that you start out cubing on Magic Online, whether it be on there or the Holiday Cube or whatever, or if you have the draft at your house. Do you have like a favorite one or two cards that like you open up at you, like you want to see in pack one, you're just going to go all in? Like one for me, like, of course, is Talarian Academy or Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas. Like, if I open that card, even if I know it will, I'm just like, I'm going to take it. I'm just going to go all in on it and just see it. We'll see what kind of crazy deck I can build. Do you have any cards like that?
Yeah. I mean, that's the great thing about Cube is I love so many of the different archetypes, and I can play them all. But I'm kind of a sucker for reanimator type decks. And one of my favorites is if I can see a recurring nightmare and go into like a green-black super value, just over and over, in your face, make you miserable deck. That's definitely what I would like to see. That and, like, Mind Twist. Nothing like turn one or turn two Mind Twisting somebody's whole hand.
Oh, man.
the best thing about Mind Twist is, like, you know, you might use three cards to get the mana out to make them dump their hand. And, like, at the end of it, like, I'm looking at, like, two lands in my hand. I've got nothing. But they're just so upset they just scoop. Like, I have no way to kill you, but you're going to quit just because I mind twisted your hand away.
That actually happened to me online in the Holiday Cube. The guy mulliganed to six, and then he played a mana dork and a land, and I mind twisted him on my turn one for the rest of his hand. And he's like, well, thanks for playing Magic with me, and left.
I had a guy, it was like turn four. I can't even remember what deck I was playing. I think I was playing like just blue-green ramp with like a bunch of fatties and like Eldrazi and stuff. And, like I was going to untap and I think I had Ulamog, like original Ulamog, Upheaval, Jace the Mind Sculptor, and some other big fat card that I could cast any of it when I untap. He thought seizes me and just insta concedes. He's like, okay, we're done here. I can't take it all.
That reminds me of the time we were drafting, Quad9s and myself were actually drafting on Twitch last week, and he convinced me to take Upheaval, which led to us losing every single game.
We had like the worst Upheavals ever. Like, we would know what he's going back in his hand. He'd have mana floating. We're like, play this. Oh, wait, you have Mystic Snake.
Yeah, like, he had Mystic Snake on board, and he tapped mana, and for some reason, neither of us thought about it. Yeah, Mystic Snake bounces back to his hand. We're like, I don't know, it was like Karn or Ugin or something crazy. It's just like, Mystic Snake? Okay. My favorite card to draft around, I think Shardless Agent is a big card for me. I think it looks cool, it just has insane value, and kind of fits in those tempo-y strategies that I like to play. Best cube story. You have a vlog recently that you posted on your channel that kind of showed you and your family drafting. It was really cool. You guys showed your perspective of drafting and taking cards, and you guys are having fun and stuff. What is the best cube story that you have, or best cube memory?
Well, it's certainly the most memorable to me. It's not a good one. So me and my cousin Ryan were paired up playing. This was like a year ago or something. And I had this really sweet black-white deck, had some of the really fast mana. I think I had like a Mana Crypt and a Soul Ring, Bitter Blossom, Mind Twist was in there, and Baneslayer Angel. And he was playing like a white-blue, kind of like tempo control type deck. And, I had four lands out and it was my turn and he was tapped out. Played my fifth land and I'm looking at my hand and I'm like, man, I've got this Mana Crypt in hand and I've got this Baneslayer Angel that I just drew. I was like, if I just play my fifth land and slam this Baneslayer, it should be GG. He's not going to be able to deal with this. And so I play the Baneslayer Angel, tap all my lands, and I was like, yeah, there's no way he can do anything with this. And then I remember passing a daze earlier in the draft, and I was like, oh crap. I was like, the only way I get kicked in the butt here is if you have a daze. And he started cracking up. And then Steven, my friend, he looks over, and Ryan just slams it on the table. Daze you, bro. You got one mana there. And, like, what made it worse was I had that mana crypt sitting in my hand that I could have played first and been able to pay for that stupid one. And them guys just never let it down. Now, every time we get together, they're like, oh, man, I'm going to first pick daze. Pack one, pick one. It just never lets down. So yeah, that's probably the fondest memory there.
That's awesome. Daze is one of my favorite constructed cards, just for that exact reason.
Yeah.
I've been I don't play a ton of Modern anymore, but if I ever play a Modern deck with white in it, I always just jam like two mana ties in the board, and it's just nobody ever plays around mana tithe, and it's just so many salty feelings after they get mana tithe, like for their big four mana win condition, you know. But yeah,
I think go ahead.
And like you said, like a lot of times they'll have that extra land in hand, but like you don't have blue mana up, and they're like, and then they can't play the land afterwards, and then they feel even worse. They're like, no, I didn't misplay that, but they just pass turn with the land in hand.
My favorite cube memory, I think, is I was drafting at a friend's house. This is when I had first built my cube. So this was like a fully proxied cube. It was like, do I want to do this? You know, we're all in and we're playing. I mean, we're kind of just getting a feel for it. And one of my friends, Sam, drafted Chaos Orb. And so, you know, we're playing and I see him throw it. And I'm like, ha, 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 whatever. Like, oh, he got something. And then I see him do it like three more times. So it's like, wait a minute, what? And apparently he had read Chaos Orb as like a repeatable ability that you just pay mana to keep doing it. So he just completely, for like two matches, I didn't notice until the third match, it completely just destroyed everyone's board by just keep using Chaos Orb every turn. I was like, thanks, man.
Because that card needs to be better.
So that's funny. Yeah. I know some people use it as a Colors Vindicate, but I mean, it's Chaos Orb. You gotta throw it. You have to do it. But that's my favorite cube memory, is just seeing him. It wasn't until the third match where he's like, what are you talking about? I've done this to everyone.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on and talking cube with us. It's, you know, it's Mind and Zekiel's pretty much favorite thing to do, but we know you really enjoyed it as well, and we both love all your pickup videos and vlog stuff. So once again, appreciate you coming on. Where all can they reach you? Anybody wants to find your stuff?
Yeah, sure. It's on YouTube, and the user name is Elitemortal03.
Very cool. And once again, you have a couple deck techs out there. You have Pimpage Pickups, and then of course you have, I think, was it GPDC you had a vlog for last year or maybe 2 years ago?
It was like 2013 when I went to Grand Prix DC for Legacy.
Then yeah. That, and then every now and then you have a sweet vlog that's awesome to see. And you had your buddies over, or sorry, your brothers. You guys had spent some time at a house playing cube, and you just get to hear, you know, the fun stuff. That little environment is pretty sweet. So definitely great videos. Shouts out to you. Once again, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you guys for having me. This was fun.
And I am Zekiel. You can find me on YouTube at Merfolk Magic or Merfolk MTG. I think I changed it recently. I post some finance videos and cube pickups and stuff like that. Also on Twitter at Zekiel Gordon. And then Drew, where can they find you at?
Well, I'm Quad Nines on YouTube. That's QAD, the number 9 and S. And then on Twitter, it's Quad Nines, just all spelled out. So I'm usually checking both those all the time. So if you want to talk cube or magic in general, or just anything, just hit me up.
And once again, thanks to everybody on Reddit. Usman the Rad from the Third Power had commented, and also Plaid Magic. So shouts out to them. They both have cast the Third Power, and Usman is Gathering Magic writer. And once again, Plaid Magic has a YouTube channel at Plaid Magic, and I believe they also have a cast. So yeah, definitely check those guys out. So thanks for listening to the episode, and we'll see you guys next time.